Welcome, everyone. Thanks for joining. I imagine that most of us are acquainted with one another, but if you are joining for the first time, I am Cortland Dahl. Welcome to our Dharma Geek sessions. I always love to just start by saying hi to everyone and hearing everyone say hi to each other. So if you want to open up the chat and just say where you are joining from in the world, we can do our usual ritual for connecting to each other. I'm in Madison, Wisconsin. I've actually been doing a lot of traveling these days and will be traveling in a few days from now. But for the moment, I am home, which is a nice little change. Great. And see people from all over the world already from Canada, France, Germany, Spain, a bunch of places in the US, UK, France. Wonderful. Great. Well, thank you all for joining. I know it's morning for some of you, probably afternoon, maybe evening, even evening for some of you. Great. Wow. All over the world. So lovely. I never tire of that. So today we're going to switch gears a little bit. We talked in the last session a lot about the practice of shamatha and the states of mental absorption, as they're sometimes called, the jhanas. Some of you might be familiar with that term, but really these practices where we learn to get in touch with awareness and stabilize and ground our experience of awareness. So that was the topic last week, which was our first foray into this new transmission that we're now immersed in, which is the Abhidharma and this beautiful text that Rinpoche has written and we're going to be learning about soon. So today I thought I could link some of that up with the practice of nature of mind, and specifically how these Abhidharma teachings and specifically the applications of mindfulness that we're learning about in the Essence Course are related to nature of mind and can help support us in our nature of mind practice. So that is going to be our jumping off point for today. And as always, I like to start with a little bit of practice. We can then move into the discussion at hand, and then we'll have a few minutes for some discussion at the end. I should tell you before we go much farther, we're going to end actually a little bit short, a little bit early today. So it won't be quite a full 90 minutes, but we should have plenty of time to explore this topic. So let's begin, as we usually do, with a little bit of practice. You can take a moment to settle in. You can bring awareness to your posture to start. I always like to go through these three steps of connecting with body, the heart, and the mind. So the body part of that is bringing awareness into your body, noticing your posture, and see if you can find a nice balance between being upright in a way that supports being alert and wakeful, and at the same time, relaxed and at ease. Can help to bring awareness to any areas of tension. You can take some slow, deep breaths and breathe into those areas, which can help the body to relax and unwind. And allow awareness to settle into your body, a very light awareness of your entire body as you just sit, just rest. And for the heart aspect, opening the heart, you can bring into this space of effortless awareness the open heart of bodhicitta and compassion. And here, bringing in a nature of mind flavor by recognizing that all beings have this amazing, pure, empty, radiantly clear awareness. It's just right here, waiting to be recognized, not only for us, but for all beings. So let's form that aspiration and motivation that through our practice, through our journey in life, we might help all beings to recognize the true nature of their own minds. So let's just take a moment to connect with that open-hearted motivation. And once you've connected with that motivation, you can move on to the third step of these preparatory stages by letting go and resting in open awareness. So this is the practice of being. You don't need to apply any mental effort. You don't need to change what's happening in your body or your mind or your surroundings. Just drop into the knowing quality of your own mind that is always present and rest there. Just be with that knowing, effortless presence of awareness. Now we'll briefly work with some of these aspects of the four foundations of mindfulness. So first, you can bring awareness back to your body. And here, a very, very light awareness of your body, not focusing on any specific part of your body, but rather your body as a whole. Simply feel the presence of your body. You might notice some specific qualities like sense of solidity, sense of the pull of gravity. This is the way that the earth element manifests. Here we don't need to focus on that or conjure it up. It's more attuning to that element, that aspect of our physical embodied experience. So just again, notice that. And similarly, notice and even perhaps feel the movement of blood, the feeling of fluidity, all of this constant movement within your body. Again, here we're not manufacturing any experience. We are attuning to an experience that is always playing out. So just notice that feeling of movement, of flow, of fluidity. In other words, the water element in your experience. Notice the feeling of temperature, warmth in some parts of your body, coolness in others. Even when it's very cold outside, your body is maintaining that steady temperature, and you can feel that warmth within your own body, which is the fire element. So here again, feeling your entire body almost as though you can sense that warm glow, the warmth that pervades your entire body. A very, very light touch, effortless touch of awareness. And finally, there is the air element, which you can experience as the movement of your breath, feeling it flow in through your nose, down through your throat, filling your lungs, and back out. And at a more subtle level, the movement of the energies within your body, which you might experience as tingling or vibration, or even a feeling of flowing energy in different parts of your body. Once again, just open up your awareness, widen the aperture of your attention, feel your entire body. And just notice this air element as it manifests in your experience. And along with the body and all of these different dimensions of the body, there is the awareness within which all of this is being experienced. So now you can drop into that open field of awareness itself. The body is there. All of these shifting, moving experiences in your body. The entire field of the senses. And like the wide open expanse of the sky, there is awareness itself. The simple fact that you know all of this is happening, that you're experiencing it. It is everywhere and yet nowhere. So here, there's nothing to do, nothing to focus on. We're just being the field of awareness. Now you can slowly open your eyes if they've been closed. And let's continue to sit for a few more moments. Remember these qualities of meditation, of non-meditation. There's no mental effort required, there's no object to focus on. And in this sense, we're not even meditating. And yet, we are not distracted because awareness is always present. We are attuning to, recognizing, and returning to what is always with us. And finally, there is non-fabrication. We can be completely natural. As Tokwa Urgyen Rinpoche said, let everything be as it is. Okay, you can move your body a little bit. And we will shift gears into a little more active mode of nature of mind practice, not leaving nature of mind practice, but just doing it in a little more active way. So I thought we could talk about a few different things today, a few points that for me have been really, really helpful when it comes to these Abhidharma teachings and the nature of mind teachings that we've been exploring now for quite some time together. And I thought I would go back really to some of the most basic elements of experience and some of the terms that we hear most commonly, both in Tergar and in this tradition as a whole, and maybe just dig into some of the subtlety of these terms from an experiential way. So we are for those of you who are doing the Essence course right now, we're, of course, discussing the four foundations of mindfulness. This is a very traditional, very important, very central Buddhist teaching, not only in Tibetan Buddhism, but really in the entire Buddhist tradition. And it's presented a little bit differently from tradition to tradition, but the broad strokes are quite similar. And it really is just starting this process of inquiring into the very nature of experience by learning to be more aware of the different dimensions of our experiences, the experiences that we have as human beings. And of course, the central piece of this is mindfulness. And we hear Rinpoche talk about mindfulness more commonly. He talks about awareness. And there's all sorts of terminology related to these two terms of mindfulness and awareness. So I thought I would get into just a little bit of the experiential nuance of mindfulness and awareness and how they relate, and specifically how these teachings on the four foundations of mindfulness can help us shift into a way of being that opens up the space that eventually leads us to the nature of mind, which of course we're practicing together. So in Tibetan, although we use the word interagar, we use the word awareness as kind of the central term, there are some subtle distinctions when it comes to mindfulness and awareness. And in the Tibetan tradition and in the Buddhist tradition more broadly, these are actually different terms and they have slightly different meanings. So awareness in an Abhidharma sense, and this is actually, I think, how Mingyur Rinpoche oftentimes thinks about it and talks about it, is just the knowing quality of mind. Sometimes it's said that mind is that which is clear and knowing, or awareness is that which is clear and knowing. There's actually kind of a range of related terms. Usually it's consciousness, mind, and awareness. They're all synonymous in this particular context, but they have slightly different definitions. But the key thing to know here, especially from the point of view of this lineage, is that it's just that capacity to know. It is the capacity that we all have to illuminate what is being experienced. So we have this traditional metaphor of the candle flame, for example. And the key point about the candle flame and why it's used as an example is not the bright kind of shiny part of it. It is the fact that it illuminates everything that is around it. By virtue of that candle flame, everything in the surroundings of that flame can be known. It illuminates all of these other experiences. And that's basically what awareness is doing for us. It is by virtue of the fact that we are aware that we can experience the world, that we can experience our body, that we can experience our thoughts and emotions. It is that capacity that is simply what allows things to be known and experienced. So it's not like it has to be some bright, blinding white light or something like that. It is more the capacity to illuminate, the capacity that allows things to be known. That, of course, is always with us. So we are not necessarily in touch with awareness all the time, but it is with us all of the time. Even from the point of view of the Vajrayana teachings, in the states of deep sleep, in the states of dream, there is still a very subtle thread of this knowing quality of mind that continues. So again, how attuned we are to that awareness varies very dramatically. We can be completely unconscious in one moment. We can be heightened. We can have a heightened wakefulness and awareness in the next moment. We can have a dramatic range of experience. But what's varying in those conditions is not the knowing quality of mind, but varying degrees of connection to and recognition of that knowing quality of mind. So that's where mindfulness comes in. Mindfulness, you could say, is the experience of connecting to awareness. So for example, you can have this moment. One of the examples I like to give is reading a really good book or watching an engrossing movie, you know, where you're just totally pulled into the plot. You lose yourself in the storyline to the point where you almost forget about yourself. You forget about your surroundings. It's just the storyline. It's just the narrative of what you're reading or what you're watching, and you lose touch with pretty much everything else. In that moment, you're focused. You're attentive. You're not distracted. You're not thinking about something else. And yet, you are not in touch with your own awareness. You've lost touch with awareness in that moment of absorption. And it feels good. The problem is that can happen with our thoughts. We can get pulled into the narrative of our thoughts, in which case it oftentimes is deeply unpleasant. So although getting absorbed in some things can be a nice little break from reality, when we don't know how to work with that absorptive quality of experience, it can actually get us into a lot of trouble, in particular when we might have toxic rumination or strong emotional reactions and such. But you've probably also experienced this moment where it's almost as though you suddenly wake up in the middle of that experience. You're reading the book, you're lying on the couch, or you're in the movie theater watching the movie, and suddenly, boom, you're back. You're still watching the movie, you're reading the book, but you know that you're watching the movie. You know that you're reading the book. You're aware of yourself as a conscious observer. You're aware that you're having the experience of watching a movie. That, you could say, is like a flash, a spontaneous, organic flash of mindfulness, where suddenly in touch with what's going on in your own mind in that moment. So that shift from being absorbed to feeling fully present and aware is like the shift between what Mingyi Rinpoche calls normal awareness and meditative awareness. And what is flipping on, the little switch in experience that has been flipped on in that moment, is mindfulness. So mindfulness, you could say, from this more technical sense, again, sometimes in a more looser context, we might use these interchangeably, but in a more technical sense, you could say that mindfulness is the process of reconnecting and orienting to awareness itself. Another way to look at this is that in our normal life and what you might think of as our pre-meditative life, and even when we've started meditating, when we've just kind of lose touch with our practice and are on autopilot, what our experience is dominated by is the stuff that is happening in awareness. We are caught up either in sensory experience, like when we're absorbed in the movie, or we're caught up in our inner experience, our thoughts, our emotions, the chatter in our minds, but we're dominated. What's really capturing our attention and grabbing our attention is this stuff. It is, again, in a technical Abhidharma sense, it is the objects of awareness. It is what awareness is oriented to in each passing moment. But we are not so connected to awareness itself. So if you imagine, like, there's this sort of spectrum, there's the object over here and awareness that's observing it, it's all about this side of the equation. When mindfulness happens, it's suddenly like this expansion occurs. It's not as though we're unaware of the object. In fact, we might have an even more heightened awareness of the object, but we're now aware of the full spectrum of both the subjective and objective side of awareness. So again, right now, we can be experiencing this anytime, right? You can have this flash of kind of getting caught up in experience, and then maybe I just say something like, be aware right now of what's happening in your own mind. Then suddenly there's like this little snap, like, oh, I'm back to that full range of experience. It's like we've only had part of the spectrum, and now we get the full spectrum. So something shifts. It's an experiential shift from being absorbed, which could be distracted or undistracted, into that full range of experience. And Mingyi Rinpoche oftentimes makes the point that although we practice this many times by orienting to an object, by doing mindful breathing, for example, or the body-based meditation we just did. You've probably all done body scans and things like that. There's countless ways you can do this. Mantra practice is a way to do this. You can just recite a mantra in your mind. Many, many ways to do this. But the important part of these practices is less about the object, less about the breath or the mantra or whatever you're focusing on. And it's more about this shift into awareness. That's really the important part. And that's the shift, again, from what Rinpoche calls normal awareness to meditative awareness. This is discussed different ways in different traditions. At one point, I talked with him about the more technical references to this. And there's actually great discussions in Mahamudra literature, also in Dzogchen literature, where they talk about gradations of mindfulness. Actually, different ways that mindfulness can manifest. At the beginning, it can be in a very dualistic, object-oriented way. It can be this shift that we're just talking about, where you're absorbed in experience one moment, and then suddenly you're back, you're aware, and you can direct your attention to your body, to your breath, to a mantra, to whatever. But in that moment, the experience of it is dualistic. It feels as though you are the awareness of that in that moment, and you are paying attention to something else, to something that is not awareness. It is the object of your awareness. It's being experienced by awareness, but it feels like it's different. It feels like it's the thing you're paying attention to. So the feel, the felt experience of that is still dualistic. And dualism, you know, it sounds like it's a bad thing in this context, because of course we're moving towards this non-dual experience, but actually this is a beautiful thing. This is an incredibly wholesome, beautiful shift in experience that opens up a whole world of possibilities and experience. It's just not the end of the journey. There's a lot more room to explore. But it is, however, a necessary prerequisite, because it is the step that in some ways opens up the inner workspace within which we can begin to explore. If we're just caught up in experience, it's almost impossible, or maybe is fully impossible, to start to explore what awareness is, much less get to the very essence of what awareness is. So it starts with that simple shift. So the four foundations of mindfulness are incredibly helpful in many, many ways. There's all sorts of insights and realizations that can come through these experiences. But from a nature of mind point of view, perhaps the biggest thing that it is doing for us is it's putting us in touch with that full spectrum experience. And that full spectrum is critically important, because essentially what nature of mind practices are doing, and all of the different explorations, the different forms of pointing out instructions, the different forms of analytical meditation, all of that is basically exploring that full spectrum in different ways. In the Abhidharma tradition and in other sutra-based traditions, oftentimes the emphasis is on exploring, it's first on connecting with the full spectrum. As we do there, it's stepping into awareness, because it opens up that inner workspace. And then from that space, essentially what we do is we start exploring the object end of the spectrum, but with the full presence of awareness. So we are in touch with awareness. We are grounded in awareness, which is to say that mindfulness is critically present. It's a key ingredient. It's a necessary prerequisite. And then you can start to explore conditioned reality. So we did this a moment ago by exploring the elements in the body, for example. So you could take that one practice we just did, just being aware and exploring the elements in your body, these four or sometimes five different elements, that could take you all the way to awakening. That could take you all the way to understanding impermanence, to understanding interdependence, to certainly understanding the nature of suffering, the pervasive nature of suffering, and eventually to the insight into no self. So that really can take you into deep, deep insight. If you literally just continued to do that simple practice we did, and did it consistently and deeply, eventually the mind stabilizes and grounds itself in awareness, as we discussed in the last session. And when that stable groundedness and awareness is paired with insight, we start getting at the very roots of suffering. But the gateway in that approach, again, the Abhidharma is doing this in a million different ways, is through the door of conditioned reality. It's taking the complex web of causes and conditions, and we explore that with mindful awareness. And through the insight we gain, we start to unravel the causes of suffering. So this is one powerful and valid way to do this thing called awakening in the Buddhist tradition. In nature of mind traditions, we actually have a very different approach. Instead of focusing on the conditioned aspect of reality, again, thinking about this spectrum of experience from the subject to the object, we actually take the subjective side rather than the conditioned objective side. We take the subjective knowing quality of experience and we explore that. That's more the orienting point. But it can be very helpful in that process to start with a lot of the practices like the four foundations of mindfulness, because it's basically helping us ground and stabilize awareness. And it also helps loosen up a lot of the stickiness and rigidity of the mind, so that when we do explore awareness itself, we we don't have such a dense set of habitual patterns that are keeping us from recognizing and understanding and gaining direct experiential insight into the nature of mind. So again, they're different approaches, but in these traditions, we really do both of them. You do a little bit of both. It's not like we view Mahamudra as more profound, so we just never use these other tools and perspectives. Almost all the great masters of these traditions really mastered all of these practices and probably used and practiced all of them to some degree. And they all have a different place on the path and can be helpful in different ways at different times. So why don't we maybe just do a little bit more practice now that we've talked about it a little bit? Maybe we can just do a little more back and forth between shifting from absorption into meditative awareness. And then within that full range, we can just shift a little bit from exploring the more objective to the subjective side. Let's just try this out experientially, and then we can talk about what happens. So going back to the starting point, you can just start very simply by bringing awareness to your body. For this part, you can close your eyes. And as we did before, just notice the presence of your body. No strong concentration or tight focus needed here. A very light panoramic awareness of your entire physical body. And really connect with the feeling dimension of experience. What your body feels like in this moment, whatever that might be. Here, just notice the shift from normal awareness to being aware and mindful of your body. And just appreciate that. Appreciate the presence of mindfulness, that you've learned to do this, that you've grown familiar with it, and rest in this mindful awareness of your physical felt experience in this moment. Now let's look a little deeper and explore these experiences of the elements. We had the felt sense of heaviness and solidity of the earth element, the warm glow of the fire element, the movement of the breath and the energies, feeling of flow and fluidity. Which of these do you experience most clearly? Pick one of these elements and just explore that. Where do you feel it? How do you feel it? What is it like? Really tune into the subtle texture of that experience in your body. And now notice that you are aware of this experience. There is the clear, knowing space of awareness within which this is happening. Where and what is that knowing? Just like you explored one of the elements, now explore the knowing quality. Here, you don't need to think about this. This is not a logical exercise. Directly observe awareness itself. Or said differently, can you observe awareness itself? What actually happens? Now, for a minute or two, gently move back and forth between your body, exploring your experience of the body, noticing that you are aware of your body and shifting back to exploring awareness. Just gently shift back and forth at your own pace. And now gently open your eyes and continue the practice for a little bit longer. Moving fluidly between your body and exploring awareness. Okay. So an interesting thing begins to happen when we make that shift into the full spectrum, and then we start exploring awareness itself, the more subjective side of that spectrum, and eventually we can begin to explore the whole field itself as one integrated experience. But that is that we move from experiencing what's happening on the spectrum to insight and experience, direct experiential understanding of the very nature of that spectrum, which is to say the very nature of awareness itself. In Rinpoche's progression from normal awareness to meditative awareness, that shift into the very nature of experience, which is the empty, groundless nature of that experience is into what he calls pure awareness or non-dual awareness. So it's not a different awareness in these three stages. It's not as though in normal awareness, we have one version of mind, and in the second awareness, it's like some other dimension of consciousness that we're accessing. And in the third, it's yet another dimension of consciousness. It's just awareness, but it's our familiarity with awareness and with the very nature of awareness that's shifting. So it's like almost you could imagine getting to know somebody. At first, we don't even know who somebody is. We couldn't pick them out of a crowd. We don't know them at all. And then we kind of meet them and we have a somewhat superficial understanding of them. And then through a deep, deep getting to know them process, then we know them inside and out. We know their personality. We know their history. We know everything about them. We could recognize them in a group of a million people. We could pick them out of a huge crowd. So it's almost like that same thing happens, but it's getting to know our own mind, how it works, and eventually the very nature of consciousness itself. So the practices that we're going to be exploring, although they might seem very elementary in a way, from the point of view of Mahamudra and Dzogchen, which are kind of the sexy, profound practices in the Tibetan tradition, and Abhidharma can feel comparatively as though it's more basic and elementary. Actually, Abhidharma teachings, and hopefully you got a sense of this in the practice we just did, they are so, so helpful and so, so powerful to do together. And it's exactly why the great masters of these traditions studied these practices and practiced them deeply and did them in retreat and taught them. It's if these were just kindergarten and kind of worthless, they wouldn't have stood the test of time in the Tibetan tradition in the way that they have. So they have always been and will continue to be centrally taught alongside the supposedly more profound teachings of Mahamudra and Dzogchen. So why don't we pause here and maybe we could just spend the last few minutes with a little bit of discussion and thoughts. I'd love to hear if anybody just wants to share, if any of you want to share your experience of the practice we just did, or anything else you'd like to bring up. And before we do, I just want to make a comment, which I usually do make, which is that I realize that many of you are from outside the US, might not be native English speakers. And I just want to say it can be intimidating when it's not your native language to speak up, but I just want everybody to feel totally welcome. I've lived in countries where I've been speaking not my own native language, and I know it can be very intimidating, but I just want everybody to feel welcome, that we would love to hear from you, even if your English might not be perfect, or even if English is your first language and you just don't like speaking up in a group. We just really love to hear from everybody. So yeah, I hope you feel welcome to either raise your hand or you can put something in the chat. So having said that, you can raise your hand if you have anything to say, or you can ask a question in the chat. I see that Gunter wrote a question, which is, what is the difference between mindfulness and clarity? That's a great question. So clarity here, I'm going to give a bit of a wonky take on this. Clarity can mean different things in different contexts. So most simply, the two most common ways that the term clarity is used is actually twofold. And they seem very close, but they're actually very different. And there's a hugely important distinction between them. One version of clarity is what we call the nyam of clarity, which nyam is the Tibetan term that means kind of the passing meditation experience, kind of the byproducts of meditation, you could think of these as. Sometimes they're pleasant experiences. Clarity is one of the so-called pleasant nyam, the pleasant meditation experiences. And sometimes they can be deeply unpleasant if you have emotional upheaval or strong bodily sensations or movements of energy in the body. Sometimes it can be quite challenging and even upsetting. So in that sense, and this is just one of a couple ways of thinking about clarity, clarity is really an experience of intense wakefulness. It's like the knobs of experience have been turned way up. The senses appear vividly clear. Your mind is totally awake. It's bright. It's shiny. It just feels like your mind is just totally tuned in and locked into experience. The other way to talk about this aspect of clarity is that it's the opposite of dullness and sleepiness. It is on the exact opposite end of the spectrum as feeling dull and foggy and sleepy. So that is one thing, and it happens in meditation. It's very nice and pleasant when it does happen, but it is not the clarity that we talk about from the point of view of nature of mind. From the point of view of nature of mind, we also use the word clarity, and in that context, it simply means the knowing quality of mind. Clarity equals knowingness, or cognizance, to use a kind of a more wonky term. It's basically that we are just knowing and experiencing things. So if your mind is very dull and sleepy, you know that you're dull and sleepy. If somebody tapped you on the shoulder and said, hey, are you wakeful right now, or are you kind of foggy and dull? You could tell them. And why can you tell them? Because you are aware of what you're experiencing. If somebody wakes you up, taps you on the shoulder when you're sleeping and says, hey, were you dreaming? You could say, yeah, I was just dreaming. Or no, I was not just dreaming. And why? Because there's a thread of awareness, right? There's a reflective quality that is always present, that is completely irrespective of our state of mind. It is present in every state of mind. And that's the point. So when we're orienting to the nature of mind, we are not worried so much about that byproduct of wakefulness, which can or may or may not happen. We're more orienting to that very simple, ordinary, ever-present knowing quality of mind. Really important distinction. The problem is when the bright, shiny, wakeful thing happens, it's so nice that it's easy to think, ah, that must be it. This is awesome. Because it is awesome, right? We want more of it. It's easy to get a little bit addicted to that. But it's actually the simpler, more ordinary thing that is the main point. So that's an important distinction. Mindfulness, you could say, is just the process of getting in touch with that ever-present knowing quality of mind. And as I said earlier, it starts by simply noticing that awareness is happening, as we do when we are aware of our breath or the body or anything else. And eventually we can get in touch with the very nature of that experience. But it all is just an attuning to, an orienting to, and an exploration of that very knowing quality. So mindfulness, again, as I mentioned earlier, it's not always present. Clarity, as the knowing quality of mind, is always present, whereas mindfulness is kind of flickering on and off, and it stabilizes through practice. It's another way to put it. So let's go to Lori. You've got your hand up. Let me just change the settings so you can unmute yourself. Okay, you should be able to unmute yourself now. Go ahead.
Okay, good morning.
This good morning.
Talk has been so helpful. So thank you. So I have a comment and a question. So I'll do comment first and question. If no one else has a question, I don't want to take up too much time. But so the comment is, I've been working with the level 2 nature of mind practices, where you're exploring mind as emptiness, and the instructions are to look out and then look in. And then sometimes you ask questions, sometimes you just experience it. And, you know, it's hard. Mm-hmm. You know, when I look out, what am I looking at? And when I look in, where am I looking there? And what's the difference? But this, what you just had us do, where you look at an experience of body, and then you look at what is that awareness that is experiencing that body, that just seemed to be, this is something I can do and really maybe gain some insight from. So it's great. I just love it.
That's great. It's so nice when something clicks. You know, there's going to be a million things that, you know, a lot of them won't click or resonate. You just need one, right? It's all the same nature of mind. You just need one little thing that's like, that clicked, that resonated. And so anyways, I'm glad that was helpful.
That way. Yeah. So I have a question, but I don't want to take up too much time.
Yeah, no, you can ask the question.
Okay. So my question is, you know, I've heard you say when we do these talks, you start out by we do the meditation practice, we do the nature of mind practice, and Then you say, now staying in nature of mind, or now we're just staying in that awareness. Now we're going to listen to the talk while we're staying in that state. And I have to admit, I'm not quite sure I know what you're what that means. And because if I listen to you, I guess this is kind of relevant to what we've been talking about. If I listen to you, I can do it in a focused way. But am I flickering off you and kind of noticing everything else? Or, and I don't know if this is a question you even want to answer, if we should be getting at it
No,
through.
this is great. This is maybe the question. So this is a great question. Yeah, it makes me think we could probably have five sessions just on this question. It's hugely important. So a couple things. So I don't keep you all day, which I easily could if I allow myself to totally go off the deep end on this one. But there's a couple things. The first thing that is super important about this, it relates to Rinpoche's idea of 0% meditation, which is the importance of intention. So kind of irrespective of what happens, there's an important aspect of the view, which is you realize or you and it even might just kind of be an understanding at the beginning that the nature of mind is always present. That's not to say I always recognize it. Like we're on the path, right? We don't always recognize it, but we understand that this is the nature of our mind in each and every moment, and it always will be. So in the context of we're having this discussion now, it's a great place to play around with that, of course, because we're talking about that very thing. So it can just be simply like, oh yeah, I'm good. I almost like you're just orienting to that intention that I'm going to explore this and recognize this in every moment. It's not to say you're going to do that, but that's the 0% part of it. Like you kind of let go of the what happens after that. You just set the intention, and that the intention is the magical part and the important part. Beyond that, whatever happens, happens. It's just an exploration. We're just out in the jungle poking around and seeing what happens. So that's the key thing, which is really just the importance of the view in these traditions. In terms of the exploration, then there's all sorts of things that I think are really, really interesting to take more what you just said as a jumping off point for the exploration. For example, one of the things that can happen in nature of mind practice is that there is, again, the nyam, the experience, the experiential byproduct of doing the practice. And even though we understand the view, it's really easy to equate what nature of mind feels like with a particular range of experience. And this is where doing it like in a setting like this, like literally right now as we're talking, can be very helpful. Because, for example, just to share my experience, I love open awareness practice. Like that for me is just a practice I love. I've done it a lot. It's natural for me. You might have something totally, everybody has something different, but you have something that you naturally gravitate to. So that's it for me. So when I do nature of mind practice with open awareness, it kind of naturally creates a somewhat more kind of expansive feeling. It feels wide. It feels like it just feels open, right? It feels like, ah, yeah, I'm like opening up. So that's nice. It's of course not a bad thing that that's happening, but it's very easy to think, ah, nature of mind is that kind of widening, that opening, and it feels very open and spacious. But there's a problem with that. What happens like right now? I'm looking at you and I'm hearing my voice, and it's this narrowing of experience. Like, do I have to like suddenly widen out and have like this open spacey experience? Like, no, like it is equally the nature right now. So even right now, as I'm talking, you're listening, you can just, all right, where, just like you did with the body in that practice, where is awareness right now? And I can do it while I'm talking to you. But now, actually, I don't have that widening at all. It's like a very different experience. But the experiential taste of it is totally different. So just by playing around with it kind of blasts apart the part of our mind that's trying to kind of lock it in as a particular flavor of nature of mind. So the key is just to treat this as like a playful explanation. Like, and it's exactly, I mean, there's many ways to do it, but one way to do it is exactly what we did with that body-based meditation where you're feeling the body. And then you're just like, oh, and then there is the awareness of it. And then what is that? But you just do it in the midst of whatever you're doing. It's like, okay, you're listening to me and you're nodding your head and like, oh, who I'm aware that I'm listening and nodding my head. Who's doing that? Like, where is the experience of that, right? Maybe nothing will happen. Maybe you'll just have a glimpse of something. Maybe you'll feel very wide open and expansive. Maybe you'll feel laser. Who knows what you'll feel? But it's just, you're just kind of exploring the terrain. And it's so I could go on with all sorts of other things that can explore, but it's really helpful to do it in this context because we're just again wearing away those boundaries that the conceptual mind is constantly trying to create around experience. So I hope that
That's
helps,
very
but
helpful.
it's a really great question to have and one you can just kind of keep in your mind, really in any circumstance. Just ask yourself that and then just explore and see what happens.
Great. Thank you so much. Very
Yeah.
helpful.
Yeah, very helpful question. Thank you so much. All right, there's a few in the chat. Let me, before we're going to have to end here in just a couple of moments, but let me take a few of these. So Linda wrote, I have practiced with space as an element and with the five Buddha families, space is represented, or where space is represented. Is space represented today as the space of awareness? So, yeah, we, so the, I think there's a few things to mention here. So sometimes we have four elements as we discussed in this practice. Sometimes space is added as a fifth element. It kind of depends on the context and the framework. And here I would say that space specifically is brought up in different contexts and is kind of represented differently in those contexts. So for example, in the Abhidharma teachings, it's presented one way. If you get into the Buddha families, which of course is a Vajrayana, more of a kind of a Vajrayana context, it's a different way. And then even specifically in nature of mind traditions, and I would say even more specifically in Dzogchen, where space is kind of like, you know, space is, it's central in Mahamudra, but it's even more central in Dzogchen. It is somewhat different. So even the question of whether space is conditioned or not, in Dzogchen, of course, and in Mahamudra, it's putting us in touch with the unconditioned nature of mind. Whereas in Abhidharma, it's all about exploring conditioned reality. So you do find a discussion of space in Abhidharma, but it's important to recognize that the framing of space, how you work with it in practice, is different depending on those contexts. So they're, each of them is a little different from, again, from the five Buddha families to nature of mind to Abhidharma and beyond. So this is where just kind of understanding the map can be helpful, because if you don't know that, you might hear the even the word space in one context and just sort of assume it's, oh yeah, we talked about that in Dzogchen, but then you might get confused because it's being talked about in a very different way and it might feel contradictory. So just like we talked about earlier with clarity, that same word can mean very, very different things depending on the context. So it can sound technical and wonky, but when you're really meditating, having that subtlety of understanding and being able to orient to what the teachings are pointing to is actually incredibly helpful. So, yeah, another interesting question. So, let's see. Prashant wrote, is awareness in Mahamudra and Dzogchen the same as the consciousness skanda? So this is another one, actually, with a very similar point to the one I just made, which is we have this term awareness, this one word. In Tibetan, the word is rikpa. And depending on the context, it can mean not only different things, but actually the opposite things, as weird as that may sound. And not only just in Abhidharma versus nature of mind, this is actually a distinction between Mahamudra and Dzogchen, where in those two traditions, they're of course both equally oriented to the nature of mind and the nature of consciousness, but the terminology they use is very different. And this is actually, it's a great example of the point that I just discussed, where knowing the how terms are being used in different contexts is very helpful, because you will for sure get confused on this particular point. Because in Dzogchen, you have a very, very important distinction and a whole body of teachings that are quite common in Dzogchen that is based on distinguishing dualistic mind from pure awareness. It's called Semrik Shenche, means distinguishing mind and awareness. The words that are being used here are sem, which we translated as mind, and rikpa, which is the word that we've been talking about today, which is awareness. So it's that same word, but you can see here that what rikpa means is actually the nature of mind. It's pure non-dual awareness. Whereas sem, this other word mind, is meaning like the dualistic mind that is confused about the nature of awareness. So they're antithetical, right? If you're locked into dualistic mind and you're not seeing the recognition of mind, you're not experiencing rikpa, right? You're out of touch with rikpa, you could say. Well, that is not how, I mean, the point is the same in Mahamudra, but the terminology to describe that is different in Mahamudra. You don't find that same distinction being made in quite the same way. And in some cases, the words are almost used more interchangeably. So again, you might find the word sem, and it's not necessarily being kind of pointing to dualistic mind. You might hear the word semnit a lot, which kind of means mind itself. That can also very much mean nature of mind. That's also used in Dzogchen. But it's just to say that same distinction between dualistic mind and awareness can be very confusing when you apply the same terms into Dzogchen. So to go back then to the relationship of all of that to the consciousness skanda, and keeping in mind what I just said, where awareness in Dzogchen, for example, means the nature of mind or pure awareness, I would say that you could say exactly that point where rikpa in this context would be the nature of the consciousness skanda. It wouldn't be necessarily the same as that. In other words, if you fully realize and are aware of the consciousness skanda, it wouldn't necessarily mean that you're aware of the nature of that experience. And in Abhidharma, there's not much discussion of the nature of the consciousness skanda in that same way. So that's definitely more the domain where we get great detail and nuance in the nature of mind traditions. So they're related, but it's very different. You could say a similar thing, for example, to the eight consciousnesses, and like there's this the eighth all-ground consciousness, and there's the manifestation of that, which is conditioned, and then there's the very nature of that experience, which is wisdom, which is pure non-dual awareness. So again, they're related, but they're related in terms of the manifestation versus the essence and the nature of that very experience. So these are great, great questions. So let's take one more from the chat and then we can call the day. So Chris wrote, as I'm practicing Abhidharma, huge realizations like the truth of life, death, and impermanence is hitting me straight in the face. I feel overwhelmed, unhinged, and groundless. Is there any way to handle this, or am I going to be okay with them as I keep practicing? Thanks a lot for your help. So first, just to say that although it's almost certainly unpleasant when a lot of this stuff happens, this is actually a really great sign. It's a showing that the teachings are penetrating and really sinking into your experience. And so the question that I think can be helpful in moments like this is whether or not what's happening feels workable, and whether or not you feel like you have the inner resources, the motivation, and the energy to stick with the process. So this really has to do with a very specific kind of wisdom that we develop on the path, which is really the wisdom of a healthy, balanced discernment, where we learn just to check in with ourselves, to see how things are going, to know where we're at. And the textbook is never really going to be able to answer adequately what we need in any given moment. The teachings and the instructions can give us general guidelines, but there's so much kind of nuance that we need to apply to our practice in any given moment. We really need to develop this ability to take kind of a temperature check of our own mind and to make small adjustments as we go. It's kind of like you're learning to drive. You can read all the manuals in the world, but when you're actually out on the road, you know, all sorts of things happen, and you need to make a judgment call in the moment. Do I need to swerve? Do I go straight? Do I speed up? Do I slow down? It's just kind of like that for the mind. So the questions that I found really helpful, the first is simply, is this workable or am I overwhelmed by this? Sometimes a lot of stuff can come up in practice and it's just too much. It's too strong, it's too overwhelming. We just feel like I'm lost in this right now. I'm not out of the current observing it. I'm like back in the current and I'm down floating down the river someplace. If that's what happens, then going to a kind of a home base in practice that sort of recharges your batteries, so to speak, can be really helpful. So for me, open awareness and the breath are like they're the practices I did early. They're the ones I've done the most. And it's kind of like I can return to those just to rest and recharge and then go back into something that might be more challenging territory. So again, that could be something else for you. It could be compassion practice. It could be, body scan. It could be mantra practice. It could be any number of things. But really, whatever it is that just naturally kind of makes you feel more grounded and makes you feel a little bit more energized. And just that is not a failure in practice when you need to shift into something like that. That is actually what you should do. That is wise, discerning practice in the moment. So that's again all based on this question of is this workable or not? And really having a lot of patience and compassion if things are feeling like they're getting a little overwhelming. There's another question, which is even when we're in the workable space, it can be workable, but I think there are times in practice where if it's too hard for too long, it becomes depleting. We need some balancing force that has a way of giving us the energy and the motivation to stick with it. And it's not the only reason, but it's one of the reasons why in the Tibetan tradition, in many forms of meditation, and virtually all forms of the practice we do in the Tibetan tradition, there is this alternation between different elements of the practice. So, for example, for those of you who have done Mundro or Nectar of the Path, there is like the active part of the practice where you're visualizing, you're doing this more active stuff, and then you dissolve it and you rest. And then you're active again and you dissolve and you do all the stuff. And then again, you let it go and you rest. And there's just this back and forth. Or if you're doing analytical meditation, you're investigating, you're exploring, you're analyzing, and then you drop it and you rest. And then again, you move back into the exploring, and then again you rest. So there's many examples of this. But what that does, again, there's many things that that's doing in experience. But one of the things it does is it gives us the space to rest and recharge and to then bring that energy back into whatever it is that might be moving up against the rough edges and the challenging spots in practice. So the balance, the last point I would make about that is the balance of the more active exploratory parts and the rest and recharge parts are another one where we can discern. So there might be times in your practice where you're spending a lot of time in just resting, and then you're just very gently and for very short periods going into the exploratory stuff, and then just back to resting again. There might be other times where you're doing a lot of exploring or other aspects of practice, visualizing, etc. And the moments of rest might be comparatively short. They're always going to be there, but they might be shorter, more brief. And again, where we're spending our time and what we're orienting to is a matter of discerning almost what the system is needing, our mind, our body, the energies in the body. Are we depleted? Then rest. Are we feeling full of energy? Then explore. You can kind of naturally shift depending on the energies of your inner experience and just learn to trust, almost like you're attuning to your own internal rhythm, dropping the rule book of what you think you should do. And really just trusting that your own internal energies can guide that process. So the more we just sort of attune to those natural rhythms, you kind of find this sweet spot with practice. And then it becomes almost like this sort of spontaneous dance. So again, those are the kind of the two points of discernment. And again, developing that discernment just takes time, but I think having the right questions to ask can be helpful. So hopefully that makes sense. Great, really great questions today. So that was a lot. Covered a lot of ground, but hopefully something in there was helpful. And why don't we call it a day here, but why don't we just spend a moment in practice and dedicating the merit, and then we can say goodbye to each other before we sign off. So let's just take another moment to drop back into awareness. Bring awareness to your body as we did before. Briefly check in with the nature of mind and just rest and open, effortless, pure awareness. And you can say whatever dedication prayers are helpful for you. Okay. Well, thank you so much for tuning in again and taking an hour out of your busy life. We can maybe all, if you all want to unmute yourself, say hello and goodbye again. Great to spend an hour with you. I always cherish these times, one of the high points of my week and month. So if you want to unmute and say hello and goodbye to all your Dharma brothers and sisters around the world.
Hello,
Thank you.
everyone.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye,
Thank you
everybody.
Very much.
Thank
Thank
you.
Thank you.
So
Thank
much.
You.
All right,
Thank
take
you.
care, everyone. Have a great day.
Thank you. You as well.